It's an Arsenal Thing podcast. Fun, football, and conversation.
Welcome to It's an Arsenal Thing. I'm your host, Tom, and with me is the ever-present guardian of silence, a man who communicates via a series of snorts and blinks, which is very attractive. It can only be Silent Dave Hutchinson. This podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, the best in below-the-waist grooming. We offer you a 20% discount off the Ultimate Performance Package and free worldwide shipping with our exclusive code later in the show. Stay with us for that. Shorts, Bermuda shorts, in this weather? Come on, Dave, you have to draw the line somewhere unless you're Lee Mason. Trained in VAR by two chimpanzees and an educated potato called Reg. On the menu tonight, we bring you the Premier League game against Brentford and the doubleheader in the WSL and Conti Cup against Manchester City. Quick, hide the accounts. Shred the receipts. We celebrate the fantastic win in the Conti Tyres Cup semi-final and cover the lacklustre performance in the league. And we look ahead to the Manchester City game. Now it's time for a joke, isn't it? Did you hear that the British Post Office has just recalled their latest stamps with pictures of the Manchester City players on them? People just couldn't decide which side to spit on. Use that in the pub and just change the name of the team to suit the opposition. Giving you gems here. So I asked Dave to go hither and find me something interesting about Brentford. 2 hours later, he came back with a scrap of crumpled paper to inform me they had a museum for water and steam. The enticing write-up says, come and discover the story of London's water supply at the London Museum of Water and Steam. How exciting. With hands-on experiences, you are certain to discover and learn about London's water supply. With the story unfolding right before your eyes, investigate old cogs and historic engines and hear the true hustle and bustle of a working water supply engine. In my house, it's tap for water, kettle or a saucepan for steam. I'm only charging £5 a head.
It's an Arsenal thing, it's an Arsenal thing. Believe it or not, it's an Arsenal thing. With football and transfers, you know who you'll bring. You're listening to It's an Arsenal Thing.
Right, prior to the match, Arsenal-Brentford, key stats. Brentford had not lost in their last four away matches. Bukayo Saka has assisted the most goals for Arsenal with 7. Mathias Jensen is Brentford's biggest assister with 4. Martin Odegaard is Arsenal's top scorer with 8 goals. Ivan Toney has scored 13 times for Brentford. Remember, this is prior to the game. The average number of goals in the first half in the meetings between Arsenal and Brentford is 125. Arsenal score 2.41 goals when playing at home and Brentford score 1.45 when playing away on average. Arsenal have scored in 8 of their last 9 home matches. Brentford have scored in 7 of their last 10 away matches in the Premier League this season. Brentford's last 5 matches have seen 4 wins and a draw, which is superior to Arsenal's 3 wins, 1 draw and 1 defeat.
It's time to enter the gunroom for a natter.
Hi, welcome to the gunroom with me. It's a bit bare, isn't it? It's a bit scant. I've got Lauren, dependable Lauren from Barcelona. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Always here.
Well, yeah, it's just as well, isn't it? I'll be talking to myself. Lauren, let's get to Brentford in the Premier League and City twice, once in the Conti Cup, not named after any particular manager. It's continental, eh? And in the WSL, sort of mixed bag of stuff, isn't it, really? Arsenal v Brentford at the Emirates. We were expecting to kind of overcome the Everton blip, but it was more of the same with Thomas Frank's side pushing and probing. Most of their best stuff came through Toney, didn't it, and was down Arsenal. Right. Arsenal couldn't really argue because we had the lion's share of possession. We just couldn't really fashion proper chances in a fairly even contest at times. One of those for the impartial fans. Thomas Franks has done an amazing job, hasn't he, Lauren?
He's fantastic. I think a lot of the time we kind of overlook Brentford. the job he's done there, he's built a really, really solid team. And Brentford's one of those games that everybody fears in a way, because they know just how good the side is, how well organized they are. And, you know, you've got players like Ivan Toney, who has shown time and time again this season how reliable he is in front of goal. You know, if you're watching as a neutral, they always perform well. They're an enjoyable team to watch, but obviously not the side you want to be coming up against if you're not in the best of form.
Yeah, that is absolutely true. Let's look at our side before we start. 4-3-3, Ramsdale, White, Saliba, Gabriel, Zinchenko, Odegaard, Partey, Xhaka, Saka, Nketiah, and Martinelli. Once again, no major surprises there. But let's talk about that Thomas Frank side, because it's worth bearing in mind, Podders, before you start reaching for the tissues and the razor blades. Thomas Frank has produced some incredible results against big name opposition. Mm-hmm. Here's just some. Brentford 4, Man United 0. Man City 1, Brentford 2. Brentford 3, Liverpool 1. Brentford 0, Chelsea 0. Brentford 2, Spuds 2. And Arsenal, obviously, and Brentford 1-1. So, I mean, what I like about Brentford, Lauren, is they play the game in the right way. They are fierce competitors, but they bring a bit of style and a bit of flair, don't they? It's lovely.
Absolutely.
What did you make of this game performance-wise? Because it got sort of all sorts of dodgy feedback. We were inept, we were incapable, we're going down the toilet. It's only Brentford, it's just a blip.
It was a tough one, because I do think that they played very, very well. I don't think we play particularly badly. I think, you know, I think at this stage of the season, a lot of teams are figuring out how to play against us. And they're really smothering us on the right-hand side. Saka's not getting a lot of chances. And due to, you know, personnel and the kind of formation, the way things are with Zinchenko starting at the left, I often find that Martinelli is way too isolated by himself to create many meaningful chances on the left.
And they've started to pick up on social media as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think because of that, I mean, obviously, we've seen Saka be marked by two men at a time on many occasions this season, but it just really feels as though that whole right-hand channel, the overlap from Ben White, you know, even Thomas Partey cutting across, it's really being smothered a bit, and we're being forced to either play very wide or very, very narrow, where there's a lot of congestion. And it's just, it's been the case for a few games now where it just seems really difficult to break the lines and to get the chances away. And when we do get chances, we're not converting them as we would like to be. You know, it's tough. But overall, I don't think it was a horrendous performance. I think, you know, we were okay. We have to remember this is a really, really good Brentford side. We are off the back of a difficult defeat against Everton. And I think we have to be honest and say that the City game has to be looming over a few players in their head. So I wouldn't be surprised if they were a bit cautious going into this game, if that makes sense. But
it's 10 games without a loss, isn't it? So, you know, they're doing something right.
Absolutely, 100%, absolutely. It's a tough one, because I think, obviously, we're going to get on to that goal. But, you know, when Arsenal went ahead, it felt right, and it kind of felt as though, you know, this is the kind of the behaviour of champions, if you will. You know, it was a great goal to score. Trossard, amazing. I'm sure we'll talk about him a bit as well. But, you know, overall, like, I don't think the performance was as bad as a lot of people made it out to be.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? You've got these whiners and whingers that only come out when you get a draw or a defeat as well, you know, blaming Arteta. I've seen Arteta out again. Get a grip, people. I hope it's not you lot that watch our podcast. But anyway, Brentford were game compact, narrow, and they caused us all sorts of problems. I was quite surprised with the strength and speed of our front three. It should have been something different, shouldn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I was quite surprised to see Martinelli start, to be honest. I thought Trossard looked really, really good since he's come on. You know, even just to give, if Martinelli's going to play on Wednesday, to give him a bit of a break as well. You know, the lack of options, I think, is becoming quite apparent now. And obviously, we got some great signings in over January, but we're also dealing with a lot of injuries. And I think it's starting to look a bit stunted. You know, we don't really have that much options off the bench. But you know, I think the front three started really well. There was a few opportunities I think Nketiah probably could have done better with, but, you know, it's that's
all
in
the knives are out for him again, Laura.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, poor boy.
It's tough because, you know, we need to just remember how incredible he was four games back. You know, he was saving our asses in some situations. So
he can't do it all on his own, can he?
No, of course not. And as we mentioned, I think a lot of the teams now are going to be aware of how the front three play. So that's why it's so important to get, you know, Jesus back to full fitness to, you know, just to shake things up a bit. And hopefully Smith Rowe will be back as well. That would be great.
Love to see him. It's kind of weird, this game, because, you know, they talk about the game of two halves. Oh, but it was a Jekyll and Hyde performance. We came out better in the second half. We'll talk about that in a minute. There was a chance for Tony after 5 minutes on the right. He finds Henry in a 6-yard box and fluffs his lines from close range. Then Saka and Odegaard linked up. There was a shot that was comfortable for the keeper. 25 minutes, Tony crashes one against the crossbar. My heart was in my mouth. He is an exceptional player, and he's all right. You could look at it slightly differently and say, well, he had a few chances, he should have buried those. But he is a very strong, solid player. And that's the sort of player that you really want Nketiah to be, isn't it, when he develops?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I think that's a great comparison. And I think, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of interesting moves in the summer for number nines. And I think, you know, I'd say Harry Kane will be the first to go. And then I think we'll see something very exciting happening with Ivan Toney as well, if that were to happen. So, you know, he's definitely a gem in the Premier League. What he offers up front, he's really physical. He's just always there, you know, and maybe he's not converting the chances, but he's always there. He's always in the box. He's there to even just put a bit of fear into the defenders. So, you know, I think we might probably see a big move for him in the summer as well.
Absolutely. 39 minutes passed and Tony was at it again. 30-yarder, but Ramsdale wasn't fazed. 43 minutes, White lobs the ball into Xhaka, who brings it down for Martinelli to lash narrowly over the top. 51 minutes, Nketiah did brilliantly to set up Odegaard, but he just couldn't slot it past Rea. 56 minutes, Tony again fires past the right post. And then we got our bit of excitement, didn't we? 66 minutes, Trossard, who came on for Martinelli, is picked out from an excellent cross from the right from Saka. Unusual celebration, isn't it?
I haven't seen that before. I'm just delighted it's not this Marcus Rashford
just looking
one
for
that
his
everyone's
parents
doing.
In the stand or something. I don't know. It went to show that Trossard has got that ability. He is a predator. I mean, he can do all that fancy sort of stuff on the side, on the flank, but he can actually be in the right place at the right time for the right ball, and that's what he did.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it was a goal that we felt was a long time coming as well. He's only signed recently, but there's been so many chances in the past games where, you know, if he had a bit more luck, it probably would have been his day. So I was delighted he got his goal, and I think a lot of people are seeing the value of him now being in the squad. And, you know, I think there's a great case for him to start on Wednesday.
Well, if you couldn't, Podders, see the value of that transfer, I wonder what you're looking at. I wonder what you're thinking about, because it was another snip of a transfer. We're pretty good at that. Old Mr. Edu, he's got long pockets, but he doesn't reach down to the bottom. It's not like Chelsea, is it? So, 74th minute, there was a proper hands-on battle between Tony and Saliba. Saliba was deemed to be guilty, which led to the free kick. What's your opinion on that? I mean, I mean, have a caution at both and pick the play up somewhere else, surely.
Yeah, I thought it was a pretty dangerous position to give a 50-50 kind of tackle and then give the free kick as well. And, you know, obviously they're both very physical players, and it wasn't the first time all game that they were, you know, there was a bit of a tussle there throughout the match. I think, like you said, a drop ball probably would have been the fair decision, but, you know, we all know how refereeing was this weekend, so we can't really give out about that one.
Yes, we're going to give you it. We're going to give our opinions on that, because it's beyond embarrassing, surely. We'll talk about it in greater depth. Onto the goal, set piece again. It's starting to get slightly concerning, isn't it? We've shown huge vulnerability at set pieces.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I think, you know, obviously we're going to talk about it now in hindsight, but there is just this, it's almost disorganized or something. And I think what we've seen, we're very good at attacking set pieces, but in being able to do that, it seems that we've kind of lost the ability to defend it as well as we had been before. And, you know, it's frustrating, especially, you know, obviously Tony had so many chances throughout the game, but we're able to keep them at bay. And then for a very sloppy, questionable free kick to result in a goal, which was even more questionable. It hurts. And I think, you know, that's not really, once that goal went in, I thought, you know, there's probably no way back, because I think Trossard's goal, obviously it was good, but it was a very hard fought goal. And up until that point, it didn't really look like, apart from Martinelli's goal in the first, or sorry, attempt in the first half, it just didn't really feel like we were going to get lucky or have that kind of break in the play again. We'd have to fight for really, really hard, and with 10 minutes left, it didn't really look likely. So I think that kind of killed the game. And then once obviously we saw the replay and what happened on the back of that, I think that was a bit of a killer.
Well, I've got to be honest with you, let's talk about this. Two players in an offside position for me. I mean, you could have picked one or the other. One was Norgaard and the other one was Pinnock, I think. It was the match official, I mean basically, waiting for VAR, it was a no-brainer. I mean, one of them was about, probably about 3 feet offside.
Yep.
3 minutes to make that decision. It was a masterclass in incompetence. And it's quite funny because Martin Keown has come out and said about scrapping it, which at the moment, I think it was Crystal Palace and Brighton, and Brighton got denied an obvious goal. And that's how it's going. We talk about this on the pod far too much. It's just a recurring theme. But this one made me angry because obviously, who is it? Lee Mason forgot to put the lines on. I mean, come on.
It's almost comical, you know, like it you kind of, when I heard that, I was thinking, surely not. Like, I mean, it's a joke. Someone's after coming out telling us that was a joke. But it's just so bizarre. To take 3 minutes to wait, and then for what? Like, what were we waiting for? Like, it doesn't make any sense.
I think he was having a wee, or maybe the kettle on or something. If he, I mean, that job, it can't be that exact, can it? Like, I mean, detailed. It can't be that, you know, there's three guys sitting there. You've got an assistant and all the rest of it. You've got your screens. You've got multiple screens. And your job as the VAR, when it comes to an offside, is to put the lines on.
It's
how can you possibly forget to put the lines on? It's so shabby and laughable. And I'm with Martin Keown. Get rid of it. Suspend it until you can run it properly.
Absolutely, yeah. Because if anything, it's making things worse. And, you know, in the context of the season, you're kind of thinking, look, one mistake, one bad decision goes against us. But when you look at it on a whole, you know, we had Martinelli's goal against United ruled
I've got quite a list here. We'll go
okay, perfect. Yeah, I'm sure we will. But you know, it starts to build up, and at the end of the day, you know, it's meant to benefit the game, it's meant to help, but it's doing the complete opposite. And it feels like every week we come back with another complaint or another issue that shouldn't be there. So it's getting very, very frustrating at this stage. And you know, if they don't know how to use it, don't pretend that they know how to, because it's clearly damaging not only the game, but also the name. Like the refs in the league surely have to hang their head in shame. You know,
crazy. It's funny that what's his name, Dermot something on Skype, ref, can't remember his name now, can't stand him. he came out and said, well, it's because the duration of the decision, it was 3 minutes and a bit of panic set in. My ass panic. I mean, you've got all these screens. You've got three guys in there. Well, what are you doing? Playing cards? We interrupt a brew? And John Malone has just sent me a message. It should have been trialled in the Championship or lower for several seasons, long before it was allowed to make its mistakes in the top flight. And I can only agree with that as well. I mean, it's we could talk about it till the cows come home, but it's absolutely shocking. I mean, if a car had a major fault, it'd be recalled, be recalled and taken off the market. And if you bought some tuna or whatever, just made that up, Podders. If you bought some tuna and it was found to be toxic or something like that, they'd recall it. So VAR isn't working. Mm-hmm. So stop it. Stop it until it does work. Find out why. And it's human interpretation what we're talking about, isn't it, Laura? Because it's not the technology itself. It's how the humans use the technology. And they're not using it effectively. And it's driving everyone crazy. And let's just wrap this up as well, Podders, about Arsenal fans are paranoid. Well, there's a catalogue of stuff, even this season and long before it goes back years. So is it any wonder when you get the bum's rush off the technology that you feel like this?
Yeah, it's frustrating. it's very frustrating.
Let's cover this as well, because if this season came down to 2 points, this could be those 2 points.
Absolutely.
This could be the one that did it for us and took the title away from us. I know it's... You can probably say, Tom, shut up. You know, it's too early to say all that sort of stuff. But if it does come down to the wire at the end of the season and 2 points were missed and the Martinelli goal was cancelled at Man United, which could have changed the entire game, could have done, we'll never know. But it's things like that. And as I say, Martinelli goal, sorry, Lauren, I'm going to bang on for a bit.
No, go for it.
Goal disallowed. That was one. I think it was the same guy as well, Lee Mason.
Yeah, it was. Yeah,
I think
he
was in the room. Jesus denied a penalty against Southampton. He was wrestled to the ground. Then you've got the Burn shirt pull at Newcastle and nothing was given. And obviously the Tony botched VAR decision this time around.
Yeah. It's crazy.
What would you recommend, Lauren, you personally? I'm all for stopping it completely in its tracks and chucking it out until they can come up with something better.
You know, it's tough because, as you said there, it's human error. It's not the technology. So if we think about one thing that I think works exceptionally well is the goal line technology, like the ref on pitch just gets a notification on a watch to say that that's worked perfectly. There's no human interference. It's all done by sensor. I'm sure at this day and age, at this stage, the Premier League is capable of implementing a fully animated, digitalized VAR system that is able to track players that are offside, or else even more simple, to get people who can draw lines and who can actually read the data correctly. I mean, it's crazy. It's just so bizarre to me. And at this level as well, you know.
It's not like it's a Tuppney-Aitney Southern League team, is it? It's like the flagship, the Premier League flagship. And it's being run by purple-headed chimpanzees.
Yeah. The one thing is, you know, obviously watching the WSL week in, week out, there's so many calls for VAR to be implemented into that because there's massive decisions that are missed, such as penalties, such as offsides. And I do understand the need for it because, you know, if you're four people on a pitch officiating, you're going to miss calls. You're going to miss very, very important calls. But I don't think, I'm for VAR, but I'm completely against using it or not using it correctly is what I'm trying to say. It's there for a reason. There was so many calls to bring it in for a reason. And in theory, it should be able to benefit the game. What is causing so much issue at the moment is the inability to read the data, to read what's going on the pitch, to use it in a correct way, if that makes sense. And that's where the issue lies. It's not in the technology itself. What it offers is, you know, fair and just decisions that benefit the game. But we're being deprived of that because of almost interpretation. If you think back to Rashford's goal against City. And I don't think we complained too much about that because that result obviously benefited us. But, you know, a City fans would have every right to complain about it as well because that was an absolute joke of a decision. And then you see crazy calls like this, two Brentford players offside and the goal's given. And it's wild. It's so wild to me. I think, you know, we should probably have more insight into why these decisions are being made. And to kind of get a fairer picture, because at the moment it's just not fair. It's what the person who's on VAR decides on the day. And then if that's incorrect, Howard Webb's going to come out and give us a meaningless, pointless apology that brings us nothing. So it's frustrating, absolutely. But I think, you know, it's there for a reason. We need to remember that. The only thing is we need to, it needs to be implemented correctly because it's ruining the game.
I mean, there's a couple of things. When I sort of was watching it and then they played it back, I was like, well, he's offside by a mile.
Yeah.
Oh, and he's offside as well. You know, maybe the it's got to be the people that are working as referees and VAR assistants. They're simply not good enough. How many good referees are there in the Premier League? Probably three, if that. I am absolutely flabbergasted that we've got to this point again. Every single week we moan about some decision or someone else does, or you're in a pub and you hear someone else criticising VAR. So for me, it has to be stopped if they can't work it properly. And it is down to the human beings. It is down to the refs and all the other officials. And I think we just, I've got to get off the subject. It's doing my head in. Let's go to the WSL.
Let's go. Let's go.
Let's go to the Conti Cup. Not named
Let's
after.
Let's do the Conti Cup.
It was a proper tie, wasn't it? With both sides going for it. But I was worried about, yet again, lack of strike options. We'd be in trouble. Having said that, this side looked a lot better on paper, didn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Side?
I don't have it in front of me, actually. I can pull it up.
Yeah, well, I'll start.
If you have it there, yeah.
I'm probably going to get the names wrong, but if you put it up and you can take over from me because you're better at it. So it's D'Angelo in goal, Williamson, Ruben Moy, Carvello. What's the rest of the name?
Raffaella.
Yeah, she's missing from my lineup. Have you got it yet?
It's coming. Sorry.
Anyway, if you've got anything to say about this VAR malarkey podcast, please send me an email. It's an ArsenalThing4@gmail.com. What would you do? Would you scrap it? It works in other sports. That's the thing. It works perfectly well in other sports. So why doesn't it work in football? Mm-hmm. It's got to be the people at grassroots level. Lauren, have you pulled it up yet?
I have, sorry.
That was a nice bit stalling. Did you know it's
It was good. You're getting very good at this, Tom.
I'll practice in my sleep.
Yeah, so we had January signing Sabrina D'Angelo in goal. She's had quite a few starts, which is great to see.
She's better already, by the way.
Yeah, I do suspect that we will see.
No, I mean your presentation.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, no, sorry, my point there was going to be I do suspect, having seen so much of Sabrina D'Angelo, that I think we're going to see Zinsberger depart in the summer.
Absolutely.
Which would be unfortunate, but you know, clearly we have a great second choice here.
She's been offered a contract though, Lauren, hasn't she? And she's not signed or not jumped to the opportunity.
she's kind of said, you know, I'm not really sure. This is something that we're going to get onto as well. Players being unhappy in this team, which we'll get there. But she has been offered the contract. Everyone wants her there. I mean, we're talking about a record holder for clean sheets in the WSL. She's a serious keeper. But she just doesn't really seem to be happy with where she is at the moment in the team. Anyway, long story short, we have Sabrina D'Angelo, who now has, I suppose, borrowed Saliba's chant, the tequila one. So that's nice to hear going around the stadium every so often. We had Wienreuther at right back. Then we had Ruben Moy and Raffaella as the centre back pairing. Katie McCabe was in at left back. Leah Williamson has been playing midfield quite recently with Leah Valti's injury. It's not a position that I love her in, but it's fine. We're going to get onto that. Then we had Little, Manum and Pelova in the other positions, and Ford and Cool were playing as well. So, you know, the major thing that jumps out to you there is no striker on the pitch. We have Blackstenius was benched, also Lena Herting, who's been really, really impressive, but who should be more impressive, who should be capitalizing more, but she does offer quite a lot and she gets into really, really good positions without finishing all the time. But the crazy, crazy, crazy that we didn't have a more attacking option on the pitch. Nevertheless, it was a very interesting game. It was a proper cup tie, like you said. So we're talking about two teams who are relatively evenly matched. And, you know, this was the semi-final of the Conti Cup. It's probably, let's be real, both teams' best chance at getting silverware this year. So it was a hard-fought match.
I think from my point of view, looking at that team sheet, I was pleased to see Manham, Little and Pullover. That kind of got me a little bit more enthusiastic about it.
Yeah.
How did you feel about the performance in general? Because it was quite a tactical game, wasn't it? It was a great effort.
It was.
Game,
yeah,
for the women's, to show the women's standard. Mm-hmm. City were on a 26 game unbeaten run, yeah, and their failure in this to be a bit more clinical cost them that record.
Yeah,
what did you make of it in general?
It was a good match. I thought it was a really, really good match, a really close match. I think it was very hard fought. It had a real grit to it. There was a lot of hard tackles going in, a lot of cards were dished out as well. I mean, City, obviously, they had a bit of a tough start to the season. Obviously, they lost a lot of their midfield, essentially all of their midfield left. Kira Walsh went to Barcelona. Georgia Stanway's off at Bayern Munich. And then they also lost Caroline Weir to Real Madrid. So essentially, their whole midfield was stripped at the start of the season. And they really were struggling to kind of fill that and to get the flow back. But, you know, they're still a great team. Lauren Hemp, Chloe Kelly, they also have Bunny Shaw, some really great attacking options. They're a tough team to play against. And it showed on the night. It was a very, very well-balanced match, which obviously wasn't great for an Arsenal fan. I wanted the game just over and done with. I didn't want it to go to extra time, but that's what we got. You know, it was clever. It was cleverly played from both teams and very, very physical.
We had less chances, but we had the better chances, didn't we, if that makes sense?
Absolutely.
And substitutions in this game. I mean, this is when you see, you praise the manager for substitutions. They were absolutely key in this result.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I wonder, was it intentional to bring on Hurting and Blackstenius from the bench, you know, maybe tire out the City players and then really hit them? Because as soon as they came on, although they weren't firing, and this is a reoccurring issue, you know, the lack of striker in the squad is so apparent now. It's so apparent. That's where we keep suffering. But we did see Blackstenius and even Hurting get into those more clinical positions. You know, I think Hurting was super unlucky, but it just seems like whatever she does, she will not score. It does not matter how close. It could be the goal. You know,
there was a goal, as they used to say.
There was one miss in this game where she was literally 2 feet out from the goal, almost an open goal in front of her, and she put it over. It was really difficult to watch, and I think you can see in herself that she's really unhappy with her performance at the moment. But, you know, at the end of the day, went on to extra time.
She's making things happen. She's excited. Yeah. She's kind of ambitious. She's going for it. That's what
absolutely
you want to see.
Absolutely. And I think that's something that we do need to remember, is that a lot, you know, Caitlin Ford, she's amazing, but she's quite restricted to that left-hand side. And it's not often that she really gets into the box and, you know, is that person that's there, even if she might be the most forward playing player on the pitch. But, you know, long story short, wasn't the best striker performance, but in the end, we did enough to see us over the line.
Let's just take you through, Podders, a few details. Hurting's impact was noticeable during a rapid exchange of chances, as Lauren said, smacking the crossbar with a close-range effort, which you would have expected the net to bulge with. The chance went begging.
Yeah.
That
was really poor.
It was like, really poor.
Come
on. we could have scored twice in the dying moments as well of normal time, because Blackstenius saw her shot on the turn, saved by a reflex stop from the City keeper. Hurting also glanced ahead of wide of the post. But let's talk about that goal. What an edge of the seat one that was. I like all this last minute, last gasp stuff.
Absolutely.
Blackstenius connected with fellow substitute Lena Hurting's 93rd minute. Offering a fortunate deflection to create the possibility of a first trophy since 2018-19. Were you just jumping out your chair? Were you bullying your partner? Were you shoving him?
Do you know, it was such an intense 120 minutes. It was so intense. And the worst part was we're facing the exact same team on Saturday. So it took all the excitement out of the game. Obviously, it was a great result. It was a hard fought result, but, you know, delighted to get to the final. But we have to look. We're playing Chelsea, who bet West Ham 7-0 in their semi-final. Chelsea are on flying form. It's going to be a very, very, very tough battle if we are to get that trophy. But, you know, it was an enjoyable match. And I think it was a very, very hard fought battle, let's say, but it wasn't enjoyable, particularly knowing the form that we're in, seeing all these chances go to waste, and knowing that we have to face Chelsea now in the final.
I think it's my favourite game of the season so far, because it just had a little bit of everything. Maybe I was drunk, I don't know, but it just had lots of things on offer for me. But it's very weird not having a striker. Let's look at player of the match. Who would you give the player of the match to?
I think obviously Blackstenius deserves a good shout because she's the one who got the goal.
It's one of those two, isn't it? Hurting or Blackstenius?
I think in normal time, I was very impressed by Katrina Kuhl in the first half. I thought she had a few amazing touches. She was creative. She had, there was one or two passes that people asked her afterwards, like, did you mean to do that? And she was she's very shy. She was like,
bit of a bird camp.
A little bit. But I thought she had a great game, but I would have to give it to Blackstenius. I think, you know, hurting, she did get into those positions, but the chances she missed were just, it was very frustrating to watch. So I'm going to go with Blackstenius.
It's weird talking about a player of the match and coming on kind of quite late, isn't it, really? Yeah. So it kind of shows you what we're all about. Let's do some Absolutely. Stats. Arsenal women possession 50%. It was split down the middle. Shots 15 for us, 23 for them. 7 shots on target for us, 7 for them. 4 corners, 8 corners for them. 11 fouls, 10 fouls. Quite a foully match.
Yeah, it was definitely dirty. But
we like a bit.
Why not? As long as no one's injured, that's the main thing. But we got through it. Okay.
We can't go down that road. God, we've got our own ambulance service now. That's how bad it is. Well, City weren't going to settle for that defeat. They got their own back in a 2-1 win in the WSL. Arsenal have collected... I've been doing some research. Arsenal have collected just 2 points from their past 3 WSL matches as their title bid hits a sticky patch. It is a bit worrying, isn't it? And isn't it funny, really, that the Arsenal men and the Arsenal girls are going through this kind of sticky, not really working patch, not firing on all cylinders?
I think as someone who watches both, the men, I kind of just say, yeah, okay, like, it's fine, we're going to get through this. But the women, I'm really concerned about this point of the season, you know. And I'll just go through the team very quickly because there was a few changes and a very strange...
Don't go showing off, because just because you've got the team sheet there and I haven't got...
I know, I'm prepared now, I'm prepared. But there is a few tactical points that I want to mention. And Zinsberger was back in goal, which is completely fine. But we actually played with a back 5 in this game. So Williamson dropped back, Wubemoy and Rafaela were playing as the 3 at the back. Wienreuter was dropped and Moritz came in. Catley was on the left. Then we had Manum Little in the midfield as well. And then we had Ford, Palova on the right and Blackstenius playing up front. So she did get the start. But it was a strange one because, the game itself, it was completely different to the game we saw on Wednesday night. And obviously Arsenal were... Crazy. Arsenal were at home on Wednesday and then we went away to the City Ground City Ground? Not City Ground. It's called the Academy. Yeah, it's something silly 4, like that.
4,542 were there.
I think it was a sold out match, which is great to see, but it was a weird one and I don't understand the decision to drop Wienreuter because she's been so good throughout the season. For Moritz. And then also this 5 at the back was just not working. And I don't know if it was because of tactics or if it because players were tired or players just weren't used to it. But it really looked as though Idevald woke up on the day and said, okay, right, we're playing 5 at the back. And nobody had practiced it before. It was insane. It was absolutely
Well, the worst bit about that, Goran, is playing five at the back is one thing, but when you see two goals as well, it hasn't quite worked, has it? And
Absolutely not.
To question his decision-making at present, and especially with the transfer window just closing and not picking up that much-needed striker, this is all part of the thing that's going to bite us on the arse, I think.
Absolutely. And you know what as well? I was thinking about it over the weekend, because you see players like Manu Iwabuchi, who's gone to Spurs, and she's picking up, I think she's got assists in both of her last games. Jordan Knobbs got a hat trick over the weekend. She just left to go to Villa. And I'm really starting to worry now if this is the manager to get the best out of these players, because I don't think it is. And I think, you know, this result, 2-1 away to City, we dropped down to fourth, we're out of Champions League places. It's going to be a very tough battle to get back into them with City in the form they're in, with United and Chelsea playing the way they're playing. It's tough. It's very, very difficult.
And two of our best players not there.
I mean, you know, that's Mead and Miedema gone has really rocked our season, really, really, really damaged our season. But as you said, we had the opportunity in January, and I think he did push for to get the striker in, but it just, you know, option A didn't work and there was no option B, C or D. So it's difficult. It's very, very difficult, but, you know, we'll try to keep the faith. There's an international break now, so hopefully everyone comes back fit and healthy and ready to go again.
I'll tell you what I've noticed with women's game. Blimey, they have some breaks, don't they?
Yeah.
One minute you've got games coming out of your ears, next minute you're scratching around for one.
Yeah, it's very frustrating. I think it must be something to do with the revenue in the international games being more than the club games. I'm not sure, because the amount of breaks is crazy. And you think about the amount of players from Australia, for example, you know, Caitlin Ford, Steph Catley for Arsenal, Sam Kerr for Chelsea. That's a lot of travelling to be doing, you know, every 8 weeks or something, you know?
I'm just looking at a message that we were sent from Stephen Lucas, who said, carry on covering the women's game because it'll get you a lot of followers. We don't do it because of that. We do it because it's Arsenal. People,
Absolutely.
That's what we do it for, because we love them, boys and girls. Don't forget, anything you've got to say, it's an Arsenal thing, @gmail.com. Right, let's have a look at that game again. We were poor in possession, weren't we? We were sloppy. We weren't at the races. We couldn't raise our game to a similar level that we had in the Conte Cup, and that was our problem. Mm-hmm. Arsenal's main issue, really, was the inability to cope with the menace and the absolute quality of Lauren Hemp and Chloe Kelly. I mean, they were phenomenal in that game. If I could give them player of the match, I would. I'm not allowed. They're not Arsenal, but we wish they were.
Exceptional performance. They really, really showed. You know, I think at the end of the day, whatever about tactics, the City players just wanted it more. And maybe it was the hangover from Wednesday night, but they just went out with such a desire to win and to win every ball back. And Arsenal were so sloppy in possession. They couldn't string passes together. Nothing was working for them. Some really poor first touches, which would open up for City. It was a really disappointing game to watch. They really, really didn't look as though they had any interest in being there. And it was tough. It was a tough watch.
Yeah, I didn't like it at all. That's my least favourite game this season, probably.
Yeah.
So we've reached up here, up to the mountaintop. We're down in the sewers at the minute. Arsenal's defending was poor. Lauren Hemp had the simple tap in from 5 yards to put them 1-0 up. And then Kelly got 2-0 with a squared pass, thoroughly deserved her goal, a rampant City performance. We were outplayed, we were out fought. Arsenal need to buck this result in a hurry. But it's, as myself and Laura said, it's going to be hard to see us doing that when we're a bit short on quality and class at the sharp end. Manham took a free kick. Rafaela's header nestled in the corner 59 minutes. And it was pretty much a terrible consolation goal, but we're having a bit of technical doodahs. Try and write that while we're waffling on. Oh, it's not working. Never mind. So we'll just go through the stats. Man City first, Arsenal second. 53% possession for them, 47% for us. 17 shots for them, and 7 for us. Shots on target, 6. 2 for us. Excuse me while I fiddle with my technology. Corners, 9, 2 for us, 8 fouls, 9 fouls. God, we're doing a nice bit of fouling these days.
Yeah.
We're well up on the fouling. Lauren, it's Chelsea next in the FA Cup. I'm not expecting great things, are you?
No, absolutely not. It's a tough one. It's, you know, Chelsea are flying at the moment. They're really, as I said, you know, they were in the other Conti Cup final and they were able to put 7 past West Ham, who are a really decent side as well, you know. They look unstoppable. And at this point, it really looks as though, I mean, I don't want to discredit United because at the moment they're top of the league. They're doing really, really well considering, you know, last season they were finishing 4th. They've really stepped up their game this season. But I do think
Are you surprised by that?
Absolutely, yeah. I am. But, you know, you just have to look at the quality of their players. And we're talking about, even if we just take the English girls, you know, Mary Arp in goal, the English number one, you know, Alessia Russo, Ella Toon, some really quality players there. And, you know, I think the league is, as much as it pains me, the league is getting so much more competitive and it's really great to see because it's a bit more exciting. But, you know, I at this stage, sorry, to go back to your point, it looks as though it's Chelsea's
move. I had
move.
A point. What was that?
Something about Chelsea. Well. But, yeah, no, it's not the ideal draw to be coming back to, unfortunately. They look almost untouchable at the moment. And I think they'll take a lot of confidence in the way that Arsenal are performing. So.
Yeah, they're not the sort of side that you want to play while our form is drifting. And there's a lot of question marks. I tend to agree with you as well. I'm not quite convinced about this chappy as the manager. We will see. I mean, what he's got to do now is really dig deep and get this team performing when you've got one hand tied behind your back. That's the thing, isn't it?
Absolutely.
It's interesting you're saying about the top teams there. It's much of a muchness. Anyone could rub anyone up the wrong way. And it's a bit like that in the Premier League as well.
Absolutely.
When we're getting all hysterical about this draw, people saying it's 2 points dropped, you know, I kind of understand that. Mm-hmm. But there's so many more of these bumps to come. Because City are not going to be on it all the time. And as we've said before, look at Liverpool's position, look at Spurs, look at Chelsea. £320 million spent in the winter window. And that's more than across Europe, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's yeah. I think it was Chelsea had more than the other four or five leagues. It's an insane amount of money.
And a lot of good it's doing them as well, which is nice.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, you know, I love watching Chelsea when they're struggling. That's the best time to watch them. Manchester City next for the men. That's going to be a hard one to predict, isn't it? It's going to be a crucial game. It's a cliffhanger, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very important. I think especially after this weekend, you know, I kind of half watched their game against Villa and the only little spark of joy or hope I had was Haaland coming off injured, but you know whether that was more of a precautionary measure or if he actually has picked up an injury, I'm not sure. It's
they
tough.
Say it was Lauren.
Yeah.
What did they say it was? The injury was it just
hamstring? I think they claimed it to be pulled his hamstring. Or you
I
know,
thought he needed an oil change. He's like a robot.
Probably that. Yeah.
What's he got? Something like 25 goals in all competitions. He's about to break the record, which I think
it's only the league.
By Mo Salah, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's 25 in the league.
Is it?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah.
If we got that wrong, Pod, just drop us a line. It's an Arsenal thing. Or at gmail.com. Just throw it out there again. Yeah, I think it's going to be another tactical affair. It's going to be tight, isn't it? I can't.
Yeah.
2 goals, 1 goal, any little slip up, any little error, and that could be it done for us, couldn't it?
Yeah, it has the kind of feeling of a game that it's going to be very, very tight or it's going to be an absolute goal fest. I'm just not sure which way it's going to go yet.
I think we're too good for a goal fest.
Really?
Those days are past.
Yeah.
You know, 5-0s or 5-1s, whatever it was. Mm. And sitting there sort of looking through your hands, going, I'm on that, not another one.
No, I agree. And I think even when we went to the Etihad there for the FA Cup, you know, we were the side that were the most heavily changed, and we played very well. So I'm very interested to see whether Arteta sticks with the team that he's been so loyal to so far this season, because I think it's probably time to see Trossard come in for Martinelli. And I don't want to criticize Martinelli. I think he's got an awful lot of criticism that's very undeserved. He's been an exceptionally bright talent this season. We shouldn't forget that. He's just very isolated in the role that he's in at the moment, and we need to remember that. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw Trossard starting and then Martinelli coming on later on in the game. I think that would be a pretty clever substitution to make. And I think the question of right back probably is open as well, whether Tomiyasu starts ahead of Ben White.
Been a lot of this on social media. Saying about, if you missed the podcast, Podders, we were talking about Martinelli, and we were saying when Kieran Tierney plays with him, that kind of fits better. Zinchenko out on the left, drifting into midfield, doesn't really fit the purpose. And we said as well that Martinelli has had really shit service over the last three or four games. Yeah. So that's what we were talking about. And there was questions last week about Ben White from the emails. And he didn't have a particularly good game, did he? I'm not going to criticise him, but he doesn't seem on his own for some reason.
Yeah.
Lacking confidence is not one thing that I thought he would lack of.
You know, maybe he is. I think, you know, it's tough. It's tough because I think he is so solid. He's so, so good. But maybe we're just not noticing it at the moment the way that we did earlier on in the season. And I think every time I've seen Tomiyasu recently, I've been really impressed. We have to remember as well, these players are playing week in, week out. Some of them are going to start getting tired. You know, that's another thing that we have to be realistic about, that fatigue is going to start kicking in. And we look at City, they rotate so heavily, there's such a massive squad there. It's not really an issue that those players have to think about. But when we look at our side that's been largely unchanged, I think you know, left back position's the only one that there's a bit of a question mark over generally when we are lining up. You know, it's tough to expect these players to give the same level every week in, week out, especially against the level of you know, opposition that we're facing. So I would be for putting in Tomiyasu purely because I think Ben White deserves a break. And, you know, he can always come in at centre-back.
The fans, doesn't he, at least?
Absolutely. Exactly. Give him a break. The poor bloke, like, he's done nothing wrong. He's been exceptional from the start of the season.
And he has got a series of fabulous tattoos as well.
He's wonderful. He's wonderful.
Let's have a look at some of the threats of Manchester City. It's obviously the main threat is Erling Haaland. But you can't undersell some of the... De Bruyne is still a fantastic player, isn't he? Some are saying he's past his best. A couple of friends of mine said he's past his best. I'm like, get away. He was an outstanding player for about three or four seasons in the Premier League, and you don't lose that touch. Class is permanent.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the perfect way of putting it. And, you know, I think he had a few injuries that probably have slowed him up a bit. But what a battle in midfield it's going to be. It's going to be so dynamic, I think. And we're talking about two teams that can pass so well, and you know, it's going to be a great game to watch if you're neutral. I think for us, we're going to suffer, but you know, that's fine. We can suffer through it as long
we'll
you know
together.
What. Absolutely, absolutely. You know, I take a draw. Honestly, I take a draw, and a good performance. I hope there's a lot of character in the performance because I think that's what we need coming off the back of Everton and pretty disappointing draw against Brentford as well. I think what we need is a lot of character in this performance, and that's going to speak more than the result probably will.
Well, if you were writing a football script, wouldn't you? you'd kind of say you have these, it's a bit like All or Nothing. We had that terrible sort of series of things, made it really interesting.
Yeah.
And then you were waiting for that big bounce. I'm really optimistic still because I think we've closed the gap on City so far. I wouldn't mind a grubby 1-0, Podders. Mm-hmm. I would take a stinky, grubby, unnecessary, nasty 1-0. I don't care if it goes off someone's elbow. VAR doesn't work, so we'll probably do that anyway. But there are other players to look at, aren't there? Let's have a look at Grealish. I mean, at the weekend, I didn't like his theatrics for the penalty. I mean, it seemed to me like he fell over his own feet, but they're suddenly getting the best out of him. But the player for me that they've got is Mahrez.
Yeah.
We were linked with him a few years back, and he's playing out of his skin. I don't know what Pep said to him. Probably P45 in the job centre. But he's really pulling it together, isn't he?
He is, and I think he's one of their. The thing with City is because of the high amount of rotation that they have, because of the quality of their players, it's so easy for a lot of their players to be overlooked for how good they are.
I think that's the case, Lauren. You've hit it on the head.
Yeah, he's been absolutely
under a load of superstars, isn't he?
Yeah, and I think Mahrez in particular is one of those players who you almost forget about, or kind of plays, you know, second fiddle to the likes of De Bruyne and even Grealish, Foden as well, you know. But we can't underestimate the quality that they have. It's exceptional. The only thing that I would say is, you know, obviously they're lacking in the left back department with Cancelo going over January. Obviously they left let Zinchenko leave as well, so it's going to be interesting to see how they deal with Saka and, you know, that massive threat that's on the right hand side, which is where we most of our attack comes from.
Hopefully you can hear me at least, because I've got frozen in time, which is not bad. Mahrez is 31,
is he?
Yeah, I didn't realize that. I thought he was still sort of late 20s or something.
He's been around for a while, I suppose, has he? Yeah.
Epic player. He scares the pants off me. I think if we're going to have problems, he's going to be one of them. It's Wednesday, isn't it? We're playing.
Yeah.
So, predictions, Lauren. I know you don't particularly like them, but come on, let's throw it out there.
I
know a lot of podders out there. They're scared to death of this fixture and they're thinking the worst. Some of the stuff I read online today is like, you know, 4-1 to City and all that sort of thing. Don't be so downbeat. We have got the team to do it. If we don't do it this season, then when are we going to do it? And we've played some of these top teams, and it's just we've hit a bit of a skid. But Lauren, your prediction, how do you feel? Comfortable or nervous? Or
I don't know. There was a time for up until about 3 weeks ago I was saying, yeah, bring it on, let's do it, let's get this out the way, let's show them that we're serious. But now I don't know if it's because I'm a bit emotionally scarred from the women's games against City that I've just had to witness, or I don't know what it is. I think, you know, I'm not as confident as I was, and I'd be very, very happy with the draw.
I'm gonna stick with the grubby 1-0, and hopefully it's a bit more. It will be tight. It will be edge of the seat stuff, and it will take one little slip up just to unlock the door. And hopefully Saka's bang on form. I don't know about the changes myself personally. I don't know how to feel about them. I still like Martinelli. I still think he's an excellent player, but maybe Trossard just needs that little bit of air as soon as he got that goal. So that could be one. And I can see the argument for Tomiyasu. I love Tomiyasu. You know,
it's a great situation to be in, though, isn't it?
This is, well, we didn't have this problem, did we, a few years back?
No.
We were getting people out of the crowd. First one through the gates, got a shirt. That's how bad it was. Right, Podders, we're going to wrap it up with that. Thank you very much for joining us once again. Look after yourself in Barcelona.
Will indeed. Thanks, Tom.
Cheers, Podders.
Now then, strikers with the worst return in the Premier League. It's littered with names you will know, and the top one won't surprise anyone. At number 10, it's Peter Crouch, 5 goals in 1,752 minutes on the pitch. At 9, it's Grant Holt of Norwich, 5 goals in 1,989 minutes on the pitch. At 8, It's Gabriel Abonglahor, or we like the sound of failure where that man's concerned. 4 goals in 1,500 minutes on the pitch, and he was ex-Aston Villa, obviously. At number 7, it's Andy Carroll, who's played for virtually everyone in the league. 3 goals, 1,147 minutes on the pitch, played for Newcastle, West Ham. At number 6, it's Danny Graham. 3 goals in 1,152 minutes on the pitch for Sunderland. At 5, it's Hugh Rodallega, Fulham. 3 goals, 1,402 minutes on the pitch. At 4, it's Emmanuel Adebayor. Boo! 2 goals in 985 minutes. Good. At number 3, it's Carlton Cole, who used to play for West Ham. And when he did, it was 2 goals in 1,282 minutes on the pitch. At number 2, it's Jamie Mackie. Who's that? Dave, you just made this up. 2 goals, 1,637 minutes on the pitch, but we don't know who he plays for. You can send us an email. It's an Arsenal thing for at gmail.com. Enlighten us, people. And at number 1, it's Danny Welbeck, or as we used to call him on the pod, Fanny Welbucket. 1 goal in 1,012 minutes on the pitch. Do you remember when Usain Bolt expressed an interest in joining Manchester United? I don't know for sure, of course, but I'd like to imagine that the Boltster's telephone conversation with Sir Alex Ferguson went something like this. Hi, Sir Alex, my man. It's Usain Bolt here. I'd love to play for you guys. I'm not very good at football, but I can sure run fast. Sir Alex Ferguson reply. I can't do the accent. He sounds like a hedge trimmer, though, doesn't he? Thanks, Usain. I've got someone like that in my squad already. He's called Danny Welbeck. Hey! From the Arsenal archives, Brazilian midfielder Gilberto Silva spent 6 years at Arsenal between 2002 and 2008. He made 244 appearances during that time in all competitions and scored 24 goals. During the 2003-2004 Invincible season, he played 32 of Arsenal's 38 Premier League games. Gilberto earned 89 international caps for Brazil during his career, winning the World Cup winner's medal in 2002. Now let's have a look at Alexandre Lacazette, or Lacanette, as some called him last season. It makes interesting reading, Podders. Last season's figures were 36 games, 6 goals and 8 assists. This season, 25 games, 17 goals, 5 assists. What were we doing wrong? We give you the 6 Arsenal players that were sold for a hefty profit. Thierry Henry came to us from Juventus in 1999 for 10.5 million. We sold him on to Barcelona for 16.1 million in 2007. That's a profit, my people, of 5.6 million. Samir Nasri, from Marseille to Arsenal in 2008, 15.8 million. From Arsenal to Manchester City, 22 million in 2011. That's a £6.2 million profit. Patrick Vieira, it pains me to talk about it, but he came to us from AC Milan in 1996 for 3.5 million. We sold him on to Juventus for 13.7 million in 2005. That's a £10.2 million profit. Marc Overmars, Ajax at Arsenal, 7 million in 1997. From Arsenal to Barcelona for 25 million in the year 2000. That's an £18 million profit. Nicolas Anelka was bought from Paris Saint-Germain for £500,000 in 1997. And we flogged him off to Real Madrid, old money bags Madrid, for £23 million in 1999. That's a profit of £22.5 million. Wow. Cesc Fabregas from Barcelona to Arsenal for £2.25 million in 2003. And from Arsenal to Barcelona for £35 million in 2011. A profit, a staggering profit, of £32.75 million.
Odegaard! Odegaard! He's the captain of the Arsenal and they call him Odegaard. Odegaard! Odegaard! He's the captain of the Arsenal and they call him Odegaard!
The podcast is presented by Manscaped at manscaped.com and we're offering a 20% discount with an exclusive code for the Performance Package 4.0 Luxury Grooming Kit. This includes the Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer for a precise shave, the Weed Whacker ear and nose hair trimmer, Crop Preserver ball deodorant, Crop Reviver toner, and free boxer shorts and a travel bag to hold your goodies. Order your Performance Package 4.0 from manscaped.com and apply the code ARS03. That's ARS03.
We've got Super Mika Teta. He knows exactly what we need. Kieran at the back, Gabby in attack. Arsenal won away a Champions League. We've got Super Mega Data. He knows exactly what we need. Kieran at the back, Gabby in attack. Ask the one away at Champions League.
My thanks to Silent Dave. You can find him on Twitter as SilentDave101. That's also the home of Jay, who you can look up as the Ball Gooner. Paul is at PMATCAP, Lauren is at LaurenD27710, and Tom is ThomasAnastasi3. The podcast is on most social media outlets, including Facebook, Twitter, and TikTok. Shout-outs to Brandon Murphy, Dave Miller of Arsenal Attic, Simon Deasy of Gunners for Life, which is twin to the podcast. And while you're there, check out Arse Devils for the latest news and opinion on Arsenal. Please like and follow this audio version of the podcast and subscribe to the YouTube version of the show. Want to say hi, ask a question, or take part in the show? It's an Arsenal Thing 4 at gmail.com. A big thank you to all of you for your support, whether you watch or listen. Until next time, look after yourselves and each other. And finally, remember this: North London is most definitely red.